Okay, let's move on to environmental and lifestyle related pathology. Let's start with the occupational associated pneumoconiosis. Now, on the exam, for these diseases, they got to give you the occupation. That's going to be a big clinical tip-off to making the diagnosis. Let's start off by talking about pneumoconiosis in general. Pneumoconiosis is a group of diseases that have in common fibrosis of the lung. And it's caused by an inhalation of an aerosol, either a mineral, a dust, a vapor, or some sort of particle. Now, what are some of the key factors of determining how much fibrosis you're going to develop? Well, first is the type of aerosol that you're inhaling. Certain chemicals are more fibrinogenic than others. The next is going to be the dose and the duration of exposure. Obviously, the more you're exposed to, the longer you're exposed to it, the more fibrosis is that's going to occur. And finally, what is the size of the particle? Guess what? In the past, the boards has asked, what size does the particle have to be in order to make it down to the alveolus? And the answer is between 1 and 5 microns. If it's bigger than 5 microns, it tends to impact on the upper airway, and it's cleared by the mucociliary escalator. If it's less than 1 micron, it stays in the air. You inhale it, you exhale it. Okay, so between 1 and 5 microns to make it into the alveolus. Okay, in this group, let's talk about coal workers' pneumoconiosis. They got to give you the occupation of being a coal miner. Or, for some of the less severe ones, like anthracosis, they could be living in a big city like Los Angeles or New York. And it's due to the accumulation or inhalation of carbon pigments. We call them anthracotic pigments. There's three forms of disease. The mildest form is called anthracosis. The pigment accumulates within macrophages within the lung, usually within the lymphatic spaces along the pleura. Tends to be asymptomatic, and that's what people who live in LA and New York tend to get within their lungs. Again, asymptomatic. The next disease is called simple coal workers' pneumoconiosis. The other name for this is black lung disease. They've inhaled so much coal dust that their lungs actually turn black. In fact, when they cough up sputum, the sputum tends to be black in color because of all the pigment. Now, luckily, not much fibrosis develops at this stage, and they only have a little bit of respiratory problems. The complicated problem is coal workers' pneumoconiosis complicated type, also known as progressive, massive fibrosis. When they develop this stage, they start to have progressive, insidious respiratory distress. They can develop pulmonary hypertension. They can actually go on to cor pulmonale due to the increased pulmonary pressures. Okay, last thing I want you to remember is that pneumoconiosis, especially coal miners and silicosis, can be associated with rheumatoid arthritis. We call this Kaplan syndrome. Okay, let's move on to asbestosis. Of all the pneumoconiosis, this is where the money's at. The board loves it. This is a family of crystalline silicates, two major subtypes. There's the serpentine fibers, which are curved and flexible. And there's the sinister type, the amphiboles. These are straight, they're brittle, they're very fibrogenic. The other problem with this type is they tend to be associated with mesotheliomas. Okay, so they're much, much worse. Remember the one of the subtypes is called crocodilite. Board likes that one. Okay, for the occupation, obviously they're going to be someone dealing with asbestosis, so a shipyard worker, somebody who works in the construction industry with insulation materials, like roofing or ceiling insulating materials. And the last occupation is people who work with brake lining. Brake linings contain a lot of asbestos. Okay, let's talk about the pathology. In the lungs, the lower portion tends to be the most involved. You start to develop a diffuse interstitial fibrosis. The lungs start to become fibrotic and white. They can actually start to contract. On microscopy, you can actually see the asbestosis fibers. They're usually been phagocytized by macrophages. They're elongated. They have a propensity to be covered by iron. When they get covered by iron, we call them ferruginous bodies. In fact, the fiber, it's long and straight. At the end, on both ends, you get these big bumps of iron deposition, which kind of makes it look like a barbell. Okay. Clinically, they tend to develop slowly progressing dyspnea. They can also develop pulmonary hypertension and cor pulmonale as well. Other things that you'll see is that not only do you get fibrosis within the lungs, you get it in the pleura as well. They develop pleural adhesions. They can get a pleural effusion. They can develop fibrotic plaques. They call them pleural plaques on the pleura. They're not preneoplastic, they're just composed of collagen. But the most severe complication that we always worry about is development of cancer. And on the boards, they may give you a person who's been exposed to asbestosis and ask you, what tumor are they most likely to develop? The answer is not mesothelioma, it's bronchogenic carcinoma. Bronchogenic carcinoma is much, much more common. Okay. Now, for malignant mesothelioma, it's a very rare tumor, but it's highly associated with asbestosis. So if somebody has a mesothelioma, they've probably been associated with asbestosis somewhere along the way. Okay, other things I want you to remember about mesothelioma. It tends to present with effusions, dyspnea, chest pain, because the tumor arises within the pleural cavity. It surrounds, it just wraps around and compresses and destroys the lung. Very, very aggressive tumor. Very poor prognosis. Under microscopy, it's a very unique tumor. It tends to have what's called a biphasic pattern, meaning that there's epithelial component and there's a mesenchymal component. And just to remind you of the intermediate filaments, the epithelial component would stain with cytokeratin. The mesenchymal component would stain with vimentin if they gave you those stains. Under electron microscopy, you will see very, very long, thin microvilli on the surface of the epithelial component. Okay, last thing I want you to remember about asbestosis is that they have an increased risk of other cancers as well. They can actually cough up and swallow these fibers, so they can develop cancers of the larynx, stomach, and colon as well. And the final thing is family members of people who work in shipyards can also develop asbestosis, say if they wash the clothes. Okay, let's move on to silicosis. Now, silicone is extremely fibrogenic, very, very irritating fiber. For the occupation, they tend to be sandblasters, people who work grinding metal, and finally people who mine, who do mining. They inhale the fiber. The fiber is silica, or silicon dioxide, and they develop dense, nodular fibrosis. Usually it occurs in the upper lobes. If you did a biopsy of one of these fibrotic nodules and put it under polarized light, you will actually see the birefringent particles of silica. Okay. Finally, over time, the feared complication is that these small nodules of fibrosis expand. They start to connect with one another, and you develop what's called progressive massive fibrosis. That's a very severe disease. These patients have respiratory distress on exertion at first. Then it progresses. They have respiratory insufficiency even at rest. Finally, they become respiratory cripples. They have to be on oxygen all the time. Very slowly progressive, very insidious disease. Okay, last disease in this group is borreliosis. The occupation tends to be the aerospace industry, or people who work in nuclear power plants. Under the etiology, they have exposure to beryllium, there is a genetic susceptibility, and there is an associated type 4 reaction. They will form granulomas in the lungs and elsewhere. Acute exposure to beryllium will give you an acute pneumonia or pneumonitis. The chronic exposure will develop fibrosis and non-caseating granulomas. Non-caseating granulomas make this pneumoconiosis different from some of the other ones we've talked about. Okay, let's move on. And in your handout, there is a chart of industrial toxins I want you to focus on. One of the ones that's historically important is English chimney sweeps. They used to sweep the chimneys in England. They tended to develop scrotal cancer due to soot. Okay, it's of historical significance. The board may or may not ask about that one. Ones that they have asked in the past about is vinyl chloride, very common in the plastic industry. It's associated with developing angiosarcoma of the liver. What else is important? Uranium and radon gas, very common in miners. They develop lung cancer. We talked about beta-naphthalamine, that's common in dye makers and rubber workers. They can develop bladder cancer. What else? Last one I want you to focus on is carbon tetrachloride. It's common in dry cleaners. They tend to develop liver and kidney problems. Very, very toxic. Okay, let's move on to drug reactions. You're going to spend quite a lot of time talking about pharmacology and drug reactions. I'm going to approach it from the pathologic point of view. And the first thing we're going to talk about is aspirin. We'll talk about acute toxicity. It's a common cause of overdose in children. It's usually accidental. They just eat too many aspirin. In adults, it's usually due to suicide. Patients tend to present with headache. They have ringing in the ears, vomiting, confusion. They classically will develop a respiratory alkalosis and a metabolic acidosis. They can develop seizures, coma, and ultimately death. For chronic toxicity, you should think of GI problems. They develop erosive gastritis. They can have an upper GI bleed. The other problem is, remember, aspirin inhibits platelet aggregation, so they can have bleeding from that cause as well. Next in your handout is the estrogens. Let's talk about hormone replacement therapy. Look at the benefits. Very important because it decreases the risk of osteoporosis. It also decreases the risk of heart disease in women. The big problem is if you give it unopposed and in high doses, you can increase the risk of developing cancer, especially of the endometrium and of the breast. Let's talk about oral contraceptives now. One of the big problems with oral contraceptives is you always tell the woman, never ever smoke. Because someone who's on oral contraceptives and smoke, they have a markedly increased risk of developing DVTs and pulmonary emboli. Okay, let's move on and talk about poisoning. For poisoning, a board favorite is carbon monoxide poisoning. They like to give you an occupation. They could give you somebody who works around auto emissions. Maybe they work in a garage. Maybe they work, maybe they do a lot of smoking. Maybe they work in an underground parking garage. Or the other one that's a board favorite is if they buy one of those home heaters that's defective. It could produce a lot of carbon monoxide. The pathogenesis. Carbon monoxide, it's an odorless, colorless gas. The problem with it is it loves hemoglobin more than oxygen does. In fact, it's got 200 times greater affinity than oxygen does. So it binds to hemoglobin and forms carboxyhemoglobin. That's irreversible. Now you develop systemic hypoxia as a result. And take a look at the some of the symptoms. A concentration of 10% will be asymptomatic. When it gets up to 30%, you start developing headaches, shortness of breath. At 50%, you go unconscious. You can have convulsions and coma. And finally, 60%, most of those patients will die. Last thing I want you to remember is you treat it by giving oxygen, and the patient will develop a very characteristic color when they have carbon monoxide poisoning. They tend to turn a bright cherry red, especially prevalent in the mucosal membranes, and also the blood will have this bright cherry red color as well. Okay, let's move on to mushroom poisoning. I want you to pay attention to amanitin phalloides. This is a toxic mushroom, which if you eat it, you will ingest a toxin. It's called amanitin. It inhibits RNA polymerase. What organ in your body contains a lot of this? The liver. The liver tends to go into massive hepatic failure. These patients become really, really sick and actually can potentially die from this. They tend to present with abdominal pain, vomiting, and diarrhea. And again, it's potentially lethal. Let's continue with poisoning. We're going to go on to arsenic poisoning. Now, arsenic tends to have a propensity to attach to hair and nails and can actually be found in these substances many years down the line. There are two forms of arsenic poisoning. There's acute poisoning and chronic poisoning. In acute poisoning, patients tend to get a hemorrhagic gastroenteritis. They also develop CNS toxicity. They can get coma, then go to coma, and they can develop seizures as well. Now, when someone has acute arsenic poisoning, if you sniff their breath, you will detect a garlic odor. That's classic. For chronic poisoning, they tend to have a general malaise. They can have some abdominal pain. They develop peripheral neuropathies. They can develop skin changes, hyperpigmentation. In the nails, they can develop these transverse lines. We call those Mies lines. And finally, you should know that arsenic is a human carcinogen and can bring about squamous cell carcinoma of the lung and of the skin, as well as angiosarcoma of the liver. Let's move on to lead poisoning, very common in the United States. In fact, it's the most common type of chronic metal poisoning. It primarily affects children in urban settings. Sources of lead are lead paint, so old houses, lead plumbing, and in foreign countries who still use leaded gasoline, that's another source. Now, the big problem with lead in children is that their brains are still developing, so they can develop a lot of CNS toxicity. They become very lethargic. They can become somnolent. They start to have cognitive impairment and behavioral changes. And finally, they develop mental retardation. The big problem, though, is once they develop edema of the brain, they can develop what's called cerebral encephalopathy, which is potentially very serious. In adults tend to develop wrist drop and foot drop as a result of peripheral nerve demyelination. They can also have abdominal pain. They call this lead colic. It's just abdominal pain which comes in bouts. Lead is also toxic to the kidneys. They can develop what's called renal tubular acidosis and also develop renal failure as well. Lead also goes to the bone marrow and it will affect hematopoiesis. In the peripheral blood, the classic finding on the exam is basophilic stippling of the red cells. Where else will you see lead? Well, lead gets deposited in the gingiva at the gingivodental line. It also gets deposited in the bones, especially on the growth plates, and you can actually detect it on x-rays. How do you make the diagnosis? Well, you can do serum blood levels to take a look at the level of lead. And finally, you can check the free erythrocyte protoporphyrin level, which will be increased in these patients. Treatment is going to be using chelating drugs to try and remove the lead. Okay, let's move on to some lifestyle choices. A big one on the exam is smoking. It's the number one cause of preventable premature death in the United States. What percentage of the United States population smokes? Well, believe it or not, it's 1/4, 25%. Really unbelievable in this day and age. Males tend to be smoking more than females, but if they ask you, what group is picking up smoking at the highest rate? It is female teenagers. There are two different types of smoke you should know about. There's mainstream smoke, that is the smoke that's inhaled by the smoker. There's also sidestream smoke. That's the smoke that comes off the burning cigarette. By far, the sidestream smoke is more carcinogenic. Let's go on to carcinogenesis. Smoke contains over 4,000 different compositions. In fact, at least 40 of them are known carcinogens. Some of the important ones are carbon monoxide, which we've talked about, arsenic, formaldehyde, which we use for embalming corpses. What else? Cyanide. The addictive component is called nicotine. Many, many carcinogenic agents. So let's look at some of the cancers that smokers develop. Obviously, lung cancer, very common. It's the number one killer in the United States for cancers. You can also get cancer of the oral cavity, the pharynx, and the larynx. Patients will develop esophageal and stomach cancer, cervical cancer, pancreatic cancer, and also cancer of the kidney, ureter, and bladder, Why? Because all the carcinogens that you inhale get into your circulation and are excreted and concentrated in the urine. And finally, because of the benzene, smokers have increased risk of developing leukemia, especially acute myelogenous leukemia. What other diseases do smokers get? Oh, it runs the whole gamut. They get a lot of cardiovascular disease. Smoking is a major risk factor for atherosclerosis. So they develop MIs, they develop coronary vasospasm, peripheral vascular disease, aortic aneurysms. They develop a vasculitis called Berger's disease. And they could also have an increased risk of stroke as well. For respiratory diseases, they get every single respiratory disease known to mankind. They get chronic bronchitis, emphysema, asthma, increased pulmonary infections. Women are not spared. Women often develop an early menopause. They also have an increased rate of postmenopausal osteoporosis. Pregnant women aren't spared. Pregnant women have an increased risk of developing spontaneous abortions or stillbirths. There's also an increased rate of intrauterine growth retardation in the fetus. What about children of smokers? Well, they've got an increased risk of SIDS. They also have an increased episodes of otitis media and asthma as well. Let's move on to another lifestyle choice. Let's talk about ethanol. In the United States, there are two major types of alcohol poisoning. The first is called acute alcohol intoxication. This usually occurs in young males on college campuses, usually at rush time, where they drink a large amount of alcohol in a short period of time. They develop CNS depression, they get inebriated, and they go into coma. Ultimately, they die of respiratory arrest because of the effects of alcohol. The other important type of alcohol poisoning is chronic alcoholism, very common in the United States, unfortunately. Chronic alcoholism affects many different organs. The liver is a big one. They get three different changes. First, they get fatty change. They can also get alcoholic hepatitis, and finally, micronodular cirrhosis. Let's go on to the GI tract. Chronic alcoholics get acute gastritis. Because they're always vomiting, they can also get Mallory-Weiss syndromes, tears of the esophagus at the esophageal gastric junction. What else? Ah, they get recurrent bouts of acute and chronic pancreatitis. They can also develop a megaloblastic anemia. And what happens in the heart? They tend to develop a dilated cardiomyopathy. In fact, some of these patients come in, you take the x-ray, and their heart silhouette occupies the majority of the chest cavity. Huge, dilated hearts. The other big problem occurs in the CNS. They can develop Wernicke's and Korsakoff syndromes. Finally, alcoholics have an increased risk of cancer, especially hepatocellular cancer. But alcohol also affects all the organs on the way down, so the increased risk of oropharyngeal cancer, laryngeal cancer, and esophageal cancer as well. Let's go on to methyl alcohol, also known as methanol or wood alcohol. Now, on the boards, it tends to be a chronic alcoholic patient who runs out of alcohol. So he starts to rummage through his closet, through the garage. He looks for anything that on the container says alcohol. He doesn't care if it's ethyl alcohol or methyl alcohol. If it says alcohol, he's drinking it. So what does he drink? He drinks things like solvents, paint remover, household chemicals. He drinks it. The problem with methyl alcohol is when it's metabolized, it's transformed into formaldehyde and formic acid. If you remember what formaldehyde is used for, it's used for embalming corpses. Not a good thing to have circulating around your body. And as a consequence, they tend to develop necrosis in the retina, so they can develop blindness. More commonly, though, they drink a lot and they have CNS depression, coma, and death. Very serious. How do you treat methyl alcohol poisoning? Well, actually, you give them ethyl alcohol. You usually give it by IV, because it competes for the same enzyme. Okay, let's move on to drugs. Let's talk about heroin. For heroin, whenever you have an overdose, there's a big risk of developing cardiac arrest and sudden death. Patients will commonly overdose on heroin. What else? Well, since it's an IV drug, they tend to develop a lot of infections. They develop skin infections, cellulitis. They also are injecting bacteria into their circulation, so they can develop bacterial endocarditis. They also have an increased risk of developing hepatitis and HIV if they share needles with someone else. Let's talk about the pulmonary pathology in heroin. Well, since heroin is usually cut with foreign substances like talcum powder, they're injecting this foreign substance into the body. It tends to circulate and get stuck in the lungs. How does your body handle foreign substances? It usually forms granulomas. So they develop what's called talc granulomas in the lungs. They also develop pulmonary abscesses as well because of the bacteria they're injecting. And finally, heroin tends to produce a pulmonary edema. Let's move on to the kidney. In the kidney, you tend to see two lesions. The first is focal segmental glomerulosclerosis. The second is amyloidosis, because they tend to have these recurrent ongoing infections. Okay, let's move on to cocaine. Cocaine is a stimulant. It tends to bring on euphoria. The problem with this is it also can bring on seizures. It can elevate your blood pressure and cause stroke. It also stimulates your heart. You can develop a cardiac arrhythmia and sudden death. And finally, with chronic use, you can develop a nasal septum perforation and develop nosebleeds. Also in the heart, you can develop a dilated cardiomyopathy, similar to alcohol.